It's time for the Canadian Baseball Network podcast with your host, Dustin Saraceni.
Can they do it again? Welcome back to a special Pan Am edition of the CBN podcast as Team Canada goes for their third straight gold medal. The red and white are 2-0 in Peru, blanking Argentina 10-0 following a great game on the mound from Philippe Aumont and a 4-for-4 performance from Tristan Pompey. They then took on a tough Cuba team to the brink with an 8-6 victory. Chris LaRue provided 3 scoreless innings, and Connor Panis drove in 5. With the tournament in full swing, we brought LaRue in on the show as our co-host. Chris, opening ceremonies just happened on Friday. What else do you really need to get you pumped up for this tournament, and can you describe the process of the ceremonies?
I know a lot of people, you know, they don't really understand how big the Pan American Games are. They just think it's the Olympics, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
But the Pan American Games is a massive event. The opening ceremonies, I remember in Toronto, you know, there was 55,000 people, and that was my first experience. So walking into the Rogers Centre, it was like mind-blowing how many people actually care about the Pan American Games. And then a couple days ago for the event here, it was the same sort of thing, except we weren't the highlight, right? So we got to watch the crowd just absolutely go bonkers for Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, Luis Fonsi, you know, the Despacito song with Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
So he came out and did like 3 or 4 songs. And I played winter ball for so long that I love like Latin music, you know, you know, kind of music that you can dance to. So I was just like going crazy, Luis Fonsi. And I was trying to get people to do the same, right? Like I was trying to get people to jump up and dance, like 500 Canadians. I was like the cheerleader for them. So it was pretty special, you know. I mean, obviously Toronto was more special because I'm from Toronto, but being in Lima, I think being away from my family, it almost makes it better because you don't have distractions, right? Yeah, you're kind of immersed in the whole village. You're immersed in, you know, you have to hang out with other athletes and take advantage of just talking to other people and, you know, experiencing what they've gone through for the last 4 years. So that makes it a lot more special.
Yeah, and we saw some, I mean, I know it's in Peru, but we saw some incredible videos, I mean, on Twitter, on social media, Instagram, of Team Canada basically belting out O Canada during those ceremonies. Is that kind of the passion or one of the reasons why you came back to put on the red and white?
So, I mean, Greg Hamilton is, you know, I've known him for almost 20 years, and we have a great relationship. He knows I'm the type of pitcher that, you know, just give me a couple months to train and I'll be ready, you know, because I'm a strike thrower. I'm not necessarily a flamethrower anymore, but I'm a strike thrower and I know how to pitch to Latin American teams, just like I said, because I was in winter ball for so long.
Right.
So I think Greg really appreciates that about my style of pitching. But the anthem thing was, it's, we've kind of been the ringleaders in those types of situations for a long time. You know, there's 30 of us.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other team here that has 30 guys. So we kind of take over and we do the anthem. Everybody gets, you know, pumped up about it. And I mean, we've had our run-ins already with being a little bit too loud. You know, we've been warned like, hey, keep it down.
Because
baseball is just, you know, we play 160 games. So we're used to being rowdy and then playing the next day. You know, these athletes here, they train for 4 years, and then this is it. Like, this is the pinnacle. It's the Pan American Games and the Olympics. For baseball players, it's not really, like, we're just used to playing baseball every single day, whether we go out and party or whether we get to sleep at 9 o'clock, we know how to go to the field and perform. So we've been told a couple of times already, you know, keep it down, go to bed. But I think, we've learned our lesson already.
I mean, Canadians are already known for being polite, but you guys are known for being the party animals over there already, eh?
Yeah, but it was like that. It was like that, you know, in 2004, 2008. So I remember Pete Orr told me, I think he went to the 2004 Olympics, and he told me stories about the same sort of situation, right? Like, baseball players are just used to, you know, having a couple of drinks at night, going to bed, you know. Normal athletes, like, if I'm a track athlete and I've trained 4 years to get here, I'm not going out drinking the night before my event, right?
Yeah.
Baseball players can do that. That's just what we've, you know, you talk to a guy that played in 1960 in the big leagues, he told you that he went out. Like, he went out, partied, I remember Bob Stanley told me, I was riding on the bus. I was in AAA with Buffalo, and he likes to have a couple drinks. So he comes back, and I'm just sitting on my chair. I was starting the next day, and Bob goes, "Hey man, you gonna have a drink?" And I was just like, "No, I have to start tomorrow. But thanks for the offer." And he was just like, "Are you kidding me?" I threw a complete game shutout one time, and I was just absolutely blacked out the night before. And I was just like, "Oh my goodness, man!" So I had a drink with him.
Yeah.
And I think I threw 7 shutty the next day.
Oh, there you go. Well, as long as you're getting the job done, right? Who really cares what happens the night before?
Yeah. But like I said, we're not going out partying all night long.
No, for sure.
We're just used to the loud atmosphere, hanging out with your boys and having a couple drinks at night. But like I said, we have to learn to kind of respect the other athletes and realize that not every athlete is like a baseball player, right?
Mm-hmm. And like, and you're telling me, obviously, all Canadians over there, whether it's the baseball team or everyone there during the opening ceremonies, you guys are kind of like a big family. I mean, how often do athletes from other teams go out and support a different sport? Does that happen quite often?
Yeah, you'll see a ton of other athletes in watching our games. We're trying to go to the beach volleyball today. I don't know. I think we're trying to wait and see if Canada makes it to the finals. I think it's the men's beach volleyball. And like I said, in Toronto, there's other distractions. A lot of guys are going out with their families. They have family in town. But in this particular setting in Peru, you either hang out at the village or you go to the other events. So that makes it special to be here because it's almost like you're forced to support the other athletes, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you're just going to be sitting in your bed twiddling your thumbs all day.
Yeah, until game time, right? I mean, you have other things you can go and do.
So it's really, really cool. And, I love volleyball, but I'm excited that we potentially could go see, a gold medal match with beach volleyball today.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. And, why not? Baseball doesn't start till tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
Monday.
We play Argentina tomorrow at 3:00 Central Time. I'm not sure how good Argentina will be. I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but I don't think I've ever played with a guy from Argentina.
Yeah, it kind of seems like an odd place for baseball.
You can jump on a computer and Google that real quick, but I don't think I've ever played with a guy from Argentina. So we'll see how they are. I don't know if they're gonna get a couple guys from that are American, maybe,
If
your dad is Argentinian, and you're from Long Beach, you can play on the Argentinian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you guys got Argentina, Cuba, Colombia. I mean, I'm sure you're itching to get back on that mound. You talked a little bit about it before, but you said you're obviously a strike thrower. You can get a couple workouts in and know how to throw to Latin American player or Latin players rather. What were your workouts like in between Pan Ams? I mean, how close do you stay to the game after a 6-year MLB career and with some time in Japan as well?
Yeah. So I've always been a guy who likes to constantly throw. I played winter ball forever.
Yeah.
And so I basically played, 7 or 8 years, Like I never took a winter off like a lot of guys take off.
So I haven't
played for a couple of years. My last time playing was the 2017 World Baseball Classic. So to ramp it back up again, it was pretty tough. I had therapy sessions and I had my brother's an orthopedic surgeon, so he hooked me up with a cortisone shot in my shoulder. That was a big help. but now that I've been training for 2.5 months, it's almost like riding a bike, right?
Where you right.
Just, as long as there's nothing seriously wrong with your arm, you can just figure it out again. And I've always been a strike thrower, like I said, so I can figure out whether I'm throwing 87 or 97, I can still get guys out.
Yeah, and I don't think we can kind of continue talking about Pan Ams unless we talk a little bit about what happened last time in Toronto. I mean, home soil, Peor crosses the plate to defeat the United States. Canada wins its second gold medal in a row. I mean, what was running through your mind? Have you ever seen a game end in that kind of fashion? I mean, with the new rules, the extra innings, 6-4 USA lead. I mean, have you ever seen something end like that?
Oh, so I mean, like I said before, you know, the Pan Am games are not the pinnacle of a baseball player's career, right? Obviously, everybody wants to be Joey Votto. Everybody wants to be, you know, a 10-time All-Star and make millions of dollars in the big leagues. So, that being said, that game was probably number one or two in my baseball career, you know, in terms of excitement, in terms of memories, in terms of just overall joy. So, coming into the tournament, you know, I was in AAA at the time with Philadelphia, and I thought that I could potentially get called up, so I wasn't sure if I was actually going to play. And then after that game, I was like, this was the best decision I could have ever made. It was so incredible. And the fact that Pete Orr was the guy who you know, he slid across home plate, and he raised his arms like he did, and somebody got that picture. And, you know, that picture is probably going to be one of the most famous pictures in Baseball Canada history. I couldn't have been more proud. My parents got to be there. A lot of families got to be there. You know, I had neighbors that I hadn't seen in forever that were at the game. They came up to me afterwards. And if I hadn't have gone to those games, they would never have got to see me play. They never would have got to see that moment. And it's going to be hard to replicate something like that again, just because of the excitement and then the fact that it was in Toronto. So, I don't expect anything that exciting at these games, but hopefully we can get another gold medal.
Well, yeah, it'll be hard to replicate that. I mean, or knocking the ball loose. And I think I talked to Ernie Witt on this podcast not too long ago, and I told him, like, I was at the game, and just like the passion that you see, when you think about international baseball, when you watch international baseball, it's something different. And not only are the rules different, I mean, the extra inning rules in the Pan Ams, each team would have a runner at first and second, nobody out, manager could start anywhere in their batting order. I mean, it's like I said, it's pretty evident that international baseball is different than, say, the major or minor leagues, but the passion is different, the culture, the competitive environment, going to battle for your country. But what kind of sticks out to you as the difference when competing for Canada?
So that's the thing, right? Like you can be in the smallest tournament, you can be in the biggest tournament, and as soon as you put that jersey on, I know it sounds super cliche and I hate saying this, but literally as soon as you put that jersey on, everything changes. We were in Brazil for the Pan American qualifiers, and we had already qualified. We were playing against, I believe, Colombia. Or no, not Colombia. It might have been Panama. I don't know. I forget what team we were playing against. But it was a meaningless game, and it was the last game of the tournament. We had already qualified, and I ended up getting thrown out of the game. I ran on the field, threw my hat, and Ernie had gotten thrown out, you know, 5 seconds earlier, and it was a meaningless game. You know, I'm saying that just because if I was wearing any other jersey but the Canadian jersey, and it was a meaningless game, I wouldn't have cared. So the fact that I had that Canada cross my jersey, and you know, the umpire made what I thought was one of the most ridiculously awful calls I've ever seen, you know, I had to let them know that, hey, that was disrespectful to Canada, that was disrespectful, that was to Baseball Canada, all that. I just went off. And it shows how passionate you become when you put that jersey on.
And I mean, it only grows after being a part of two gold medal teams. What was it about the players that represented Canada that were able to get the job done, especially as we talked about going up against a juggernaut in the States in Toronto?
Yeah, that American team was actually pretty good. You look back, they had some really good prospects. They had, you know, Casey Kochman. They had the older guys. So the fact that we were able to beat them was pretty special. But we also had some good players too. You know, we had Jeff Francis was a guy. He's also a guy kind of like me where, you know, you give him 2 months, he's no dummy. He knows how to pitch, whether he's throwing 85 or 95. Tyler O'Neill was a guy that we had, and he's obviously doing really well now. So I don't know how this team stacks up against that team, just because we have a lot of young guys that could potentially be good in the future. I didn't know that Tyler O'Neill was going to be as good as he is now, you know?
Right.
But it's cool when you put a team together like that, there's a bunch of 20-year-olds and there's a bunch of 34-year-olds.
Yeah.
I think that's the best dynamic when you're putting together a roster, and Greg knows that. He knows that he needs old veterans mixed with young guys who could potentially be, you know, major league players at some point in their careers. And that's what was so special about that team, is there was guys that are going to be all-stars like Tyler O'Neill, and then there were guys like Jeff Francis who are literally coming off the couch, but they know how to pitch.
And that's kind of how the rosters filled out this year in Peru. I mean, you talk about the young guys. How important are these young guys and the impact they'll have on this team in Peru? I mean, I'm talking about like the Edward Julians, who's been almost unstoppable at Auburn, the Tristan Pompeys, who's had an incredible three-year career at Kentucky. I mean, how comfortable are they and how important are they to this team?
They're incredibly important, not only to the team, they're important to the future. It's a pretty cool transition period that Greg's going in right now. He's going through it, you know, just because there's not really a lot of 27, 28-year-olds. There's just a lot of older guys and a lot of younger guys. So that's where his knowledge of all the players and how to put a roster together really comes into play. Because if you told me to put together a team with only 20-year-olds and only 35-year-olds, I wouldn't know what to do. You know, so he's just that's probably part of the reason why I'm on the roster is he strategically puts together these guys who he thinks are going to mesh well together. So Tristan Pompey, I love his game. You know, obviously I played with his brother for a number of years.
Right.
But it's funny that I did play with Dalton and now I'm playing with Tristan. I remember meeting Tristan when he was like 16. I never thought that I was going to play with him. You know, and he could potentially be a great player in the big leagues at some point. Edward Julian obviously is I haven't seen him really play that often, but I've heard a lot of really good things about him. So it's going to be interesting. You know, I'm not guaranteeing a gold medal just because there are some good quality teams here, but at the same time, we have the rosters is perfectly put together. Greg is a genius. Everybody knows that. You know, Ernie is so good at managing a team, whether it's a young team, whether it's an old team. He lets us do our own thing. You know, he knows that we're adults. He says that constantly, that you guys are grown men. You guys can do what you want, but just be ready to play when you cross those lines.
I mean, I'm not sure if Hamilton needs to continue to reiterate to some of the older guys on this team. I mean, with the MLB experience on the roster, it's pretty nice to have. I mean, Dustin Mollican, Richmond, yourself, exactly. Is this the type of team that can three-peat in your mind?
Yeah, you know, they are. And you never really know until you start a tournament. But I've been around long enough. I've been on a lot of national teams where, you know, the roster is really, really good in terms of talent, but they just didn't mesh or vice versa, right? If you put together a team like let's say this year where you have me, you have Scott Richmond, Dustin Mullican, Tyson Gillies, a lot of guys that are kind of on the tail ends of their career, but they know how to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's most important. You see that a lot in pro sports, you know, the Lakers, the Dallas Cowboys, the Toronto Maple Leafs this year, they had a great roster, but they didn't even come close to winning. And that's where Greg comes in. And I hate to pump his tires constantly, but he deserves it. He's just a genius at putting together rosters, you know, putting together rosters that he knows will be winning rosters. So I'm really excited to be here. I'm happy that Greg still thinks I'm a viable option in terms of my athletic ability, my knowledge of baseball. And it's just a really, really, really unique experience that I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, when you get that call from Greg, I mean, what's the first thing that runs through your mind? Are you immediately saying yes to come to Peru?
Yeah. So after Brazil in March, or when was it? February, he sat me down and he said, "Would you be willing to come to the Pan Am Games in July if you stay healthy?" His whole thing is you need to stay in shape. You know, I trust you.
Right.
I hope that just because you are coming off the couch doesn't mean that you're literally coming off the couch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I promised him that I would stay in shape. I promised him that I would be 100% committed to being on this roster, and I was. I worked my butt off, and here I am. You know, I feel really good. I'm hoping to play winter ball this year. I'm hoping to go to the Premier 12 in November and just kind of continue this thing and hopefully end with an Olympic berth next July.
I mean, the Pan Ams are an incredible tournament, but the Olympics are just next level. And to be able to wear that Canada jersey at the Olympics is a different feat in itself, right?
Yeah, it's totally, totally different. Like, the Olympics are just the big leagues of everything, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be so tough to make the Olympics just because there's only six spots available. Most people don't realize that only six baseball teams are going to the Olympics in Tokyo. Japan's already has their spot, although they probably would have had a spot anyways.
Right.
So it's going to be a hard road, and I think everybody here realizes that. But if Scott Richmond, if you know, Chris LaRue, if Dustin Mullikin, if they could end their careers as Olympic athletes, it's going to be next level. Yeah. And that's kind of why I'm putting my body through the torture that I'm putting it through right now, is because ending my you know, almost 15, 16 year professional career as an Olympic athlete would be pretty, pretty ridiculous.
What more motivation do you need, right?
Exactly. And then the Premier 12 is awesome too. In November, we go to Tokyo first and then we go to Korea, Seoul. So it's almost like I'm taking all these awesome trips that I don't have to pay for. So why not train for it, right?
Exactly. I mean, and you get to play a little baseball at a pretty damn high level. So why not?
Yeah. So I'm really excited to be here. I know, you know, I love playing for Ernie. Tim Leeper is one of my favorite human beings on this planet. Paul Quantrill. Denny Boucher, Greg, like it's just ridiculous that these guys are with us, these guys are coaching us, and these guys are willing to kind of, you know, give up weeks of their year to kind of see this thing through, to get to the Olympics and potentially win a gold medal.
And Chris, while we talk about basically the ins and outs of Canadian baseball, I mean, it'll be difficult not to discuss the draft at this point. 25 Canadians this year, up from 19 from a year ago. Desaun Brown kicked things off in the third round when he was selected by the Blue Jays. Not even that, but we're also seeing young talent like Mike Soroka, among others, thrive in the major leagues. He's been almost unhittable. What does this mean for Canadian baseball moving forward? Or does this mean anything in terms of progress in your mind?
I mean, I think there's... The more, you know, the more the Blue Jays win, the more you see the Mike Sorokas of the world, the Joey Votto's, the, you know, Cal Quantrill's.
Yeah.
The more big Canadian names that become big leaguers, I think that'll make the game just more popular. And I'm really, you know, I'm especially excited about Cal Quantrill and Mike Soroka, because those are guys that could kind of carry the torch for... Because they're proud Canadians, you know. I hate to call out, you know, guys, so I'm not going to. But there's certain guys that just they don't ever play in World Baseball Classics, and I hate looking at, you know, the Dominican roster and the Venezuelan roster and the American roster when there are hundreds of millions of dollars, guys that are making, you know, $20-30 million a year. They're playing in the event, so that's not an excuse to me. You know, it's not an excuse that, oh, I want to get ready for the season. Just do it. Just as a proud Canadian, play in the World Baseball Classic. The last World Baseball Classic, really, it frustrated me to no end, because there's so many good players in Canada that are from Canada that could participate and make the World Baseball Classic team a good team. But they just don't play for whatever reason. And then, you know, when you get a guy like Ryan Dempster who has to come back and pitch against Dominican, they had 12 Hall of Famers on their team, it's just ridiculous. Like, I'm not going to call guys out, so don't ask me to call guys out.
I won't.
Know who they are. They know, you know, this is kind of long-winded, but I know that Mike Soroka, I know that Cal Quantrill will be committed to World Baseball Classics in the future, whether they're making $10 million, $20 million, whatever. As long as they're healthy, they will be playing in the World Baseball Classic. And that's what I'm most excited about, because that's a huge event that young people get to watch. You know, it's on ESPN, Sportsnet, all these huge networks. And good players from Canada need to be seen. They don't need to be watching Ryan Dempster, who's literally off the couch, pitching against Dominican. They don't need to be watching that. They need to be watching Cal Quantrill, Mike Soroka, James Paxton, all these big guys that should be pitching in those games. They need to be seeing those guys.
Yeah, and I know obviously you don't want to call anybody out, but there are a lot of people out there that could have been playing and that could have been helping the competitive window for Canada on the biggest stage. And especially when you see guys like, I mean, Freddie Freeman, people who didn't even need to suit up for Canada or could have tried to suit up for the States, come out and play for Canada, that's when it gets almost a little bit more frustrating that other people wouldn't suit up for Canada on that big stage.
Yeah, it just, you know, I was mad then. I'm still frustrated about it just because that tournament was, I mean, I'm going to go out and say it was embarrassing for us just because we didn't do, we weren't even remotely competitive, you know, and the disappointing thing is Canada has good baseball players.
For sure.
Very good baseball players. Yeah. And if everybody competed, we would be very, very competitive. And it would be different if you looked at a roster like Dominican and they had their, you know, their second tier players as well, but they didn't. That's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah. You know,
there's literally 10 or 12 future Hall of Famers on that team that are making $25 million a year, and they were playing for their squad. That was the most frustrating thing.
Exactly, yeah, because the best thing is that Canadian baseball has progressed, and you can see it at the big league level, and to have all of our best players play at the same time, it would just be fun to watch from a Canadian standpoint, even if you aren't a big fan of the game of baseball, but to see Canada go out and compete with the best of the best, right?
I agree. I'm not gonna beat a dead horse. I think everybody knows how I feel. A lot of people know how other guys feel, but it was just, you know, I'm gonna end it right here. It was just disappointing.
Yeah, and to take a step back, I mean, from baseball and to talk about your life, I guess, away from the game, what kind of things do you get up to in the off season? I mean, I think I read somewhere that you surf every now and then. What's life like outside of baseball for you?
Life for me, you know, I'm kind of, my life has been so crazy, as everybody knows, over the last few years that currently I'm a bit of a hermit, you know, like I don't love going out. I don't love going to, you know, I had tickets to go to the Raptors final game and I turned them down just because I didn't want to be around a huge crowd. I would have rather just watched it on my couch, you know, on the big screen. So life for me is pretty low-key, pretty chill right now. I renovated a house and that took up a lot of my time. I'm working with Sportsnet quite part-time right now. So that takes up some of my time and everything else is just gravy. I've worked my ass off for the last 15 years and I feel that I deserve a little bit of downtime, and being in the public eye for the last couple of years wasn't my favorite. So I'm taking a little bit of time right now just for myself and being a little bit of a hermit. I feel like I'm allowed to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, we know exactly what you're talking about, especially from being in the public eye. And I'm sorry I got to ask you about it, but you kind of made a big transition from the bright lights of the major leagues to television in 2017, obviously on The Bachelor. What was that transition like for you? I mean, I know you said you don't really enjoy being in the public eye, but at the same time, it was kind of cool to see you go through all the things that you did.
Yeah, so it was an experience, that's for sure. A lot of people ask me, how did you enjoy it? Random people on the street come up to me and ask me the same question.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't enjoy it at all. It wasn't for me. It wasn't something that I'm meant to do. You know, a lot of people love the spotlight. A lot of people love the Instagram followers. A lot of people love, you know, I'm gonna post a skinny fit tea company for $1,000 on my Instagram. That's just not me, because I don't care about that, right? Like, I don't care about the likes. I don't care about the followers. I don't care about any of that. So the fact that I did it, you know, it's whatever. I don't regret anything I've done in my life, but I didn't not enjoy it. If you paid me $20 billion, I probably wouldn't do it again.
Oh, damn.
The whole experience was something that, you know, it wasn't what I expected, just because I wasn't a fan of the show to begin with. Like, right. I never watched the show. I never understood the show. So just being thrown into that situation, I didn't really know what to do. And if I don't like something, I'm going to tell you. That's just how I've always been. So the fact that I did that, you know, it is what it is. I did it. It was my own fault for signing the contract, but at the same time, that's not me. I should have never done it, and I'm just moving forward now and not looking back.
Yeah, I feel like half of the reason is because something that's supposed to be so private was made so public, and in front of cameras and stuff, it's usually not the natural way to do things.
Yeah, and it's not, the show itself isn't really something that, you know, it's hard for me to describe. I don't know the legalities of what I'm allowed to say and what not to say, so... I don't want to really get into that.
Yeah, it's probably smart to say less at this point.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, I'll give you my opinion about how I thought about it, but I'm not gonna dive too deep into it.
Right.
It's just my personality wasn't meant to be on a reality show like that. You know, I'll do Amazing Race or something like that just because that's more fun and light. But when it comes to something like The Bachelor. It just wasn't, it's just not who I am. It's never been who I am, and everything was pretty forced. So that's the huge reason why I didn't enjoy it, is because that the whole point of the show isn't who I am, and everything was forced. So, with that being said, like I said, you know, I'm just enjoying my life right now. I'm enjoying baseball. I'm enjoying working for Sportsnet. And everything else I'm doing is just, it's what I want to do. Nothing's being forced in my life. Nothing is, you know, nothing is scripted. So it's good for me to be where I am right now, and I'm just happy.
Yeah, well, hopefully the script is for Team Canada to win a third straight gold at the Pan Ams, right?
That's the script, you know. and if I could write the script, I would write an Olympic berth and an Olympic gold medal in there. I think that we can do it. I think there's going to be a lot of good players. Andrew Albers, Scott Matheson, Jamie Romack. Those are all guys playing in Asia right now, and I'm pretty sure they're allowed to play in the Olympics. So it'll be good to have those guys on Olympic roster too. I just hope that we can get there.
Perfect. Yeah, well, we're definitely looking forward to see the best of the best, and definitely looking forward to keeping a close eye on you guys in Peru. And I appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for coming on, and I think that's the perfect way to end it.
Yeah, man. It'll be pretty cool. And, you know, I've done a lot of cool things in my life, but winning an Olympic gold medal would be number one on that list. I've heard a lot of good things about the Olympics. A good friend of mine is Pete Orr, and he experienced the whole Olympic experience.
Yeah.
And he had nothing but unreal things to say, so I'm jealous that he got to experience it, and I really, really want that.